From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Department of Education issued new guidelines this week on offering single-sex programs in public schools. As the nation grapples with how to fix public education, more and more schools are hoping that separating the sexes will lead to big jumps in performance. But critics see downsides, real downsides, to single-sex education. The ACLU has compared separating the sexes to separating people of different races. This hour on Point, the big debate over single-sex education in public schools. You can join us on air or online. Would you like your children in girls-only or boys-only classes? Or do you feel that school is where they should learn to interact with children of the opposite sex? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Bethesda, Maryland, is Sarah Sparks, assistant editor at Education Week, where she covers education research and writes the blog Inside School Research. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So tell us about these Department of Education guidelines regarding single-sex schools just released.
That's right. These were just released on Monday, and they specifically deal with schools interested in separating boys and girls for specific classes, not for full schools that are all boy or all girl. Moreover, the schools can never offer a single-sex vocational or technical class. We're talking about core curriculum here. So the guidance says if a school wants to offer a single-sex class for a subject like math, it must make a clear case that doing so would lead to better student achievement in the specific grade and subject being taught. You can't have a blanket justification for teaching science in boys and girls separated classes in every grade. There also has to be a co-ed option of the same class, which would make it about three classes for every class that you're every subject you're going to offer for that. And you have to allow parents to opt into whichever one they want. Moreover, once the class is started, the school has to avoid considering sex when it comes to the teachers leading the class. It must avoid gender stereotypes in instruction and must conduct regular reviews to make sure the class is not discriminating against students based on their sex. That includes making sure transgender students are allowed to attend the class for the gender they identify with, regardless of their biological sex.
So there's a lot there, Sarah. Tell us how many single-sex public schools there are currently in the United States.
There are about 750 that offer a single-sex class, and another 850 that are full schools of either all boys or all girls. This is only in the public sector. Obviously, there's a lot more in private and parochial.
And so what does a public school have to do if it wants to introduce single-sex classes? Do they, beyond following the guidelines that the DOE has set out?
Well, I think the structure for it is going to be the biggest challenge, particularly for rural and smaller schools. They have to set up that co-ed plus single-sex offering for any grade and any subject that they want to do. They also, that little line about making a justification that it is will improve student achievement. That's going to be a bit of a heavy lift for a lot of districts, just because they have to prove with evidence that this is going to be the right thing to do for their students in each grade.
Well, what is the evidence? Is there clear data showing that single-sex or co-ed classes are better?
Not really. There's a lot of very mixed results there, and actually a fair amount of evidence that it doesn't particularly improve student achievement more than using similar education techniques, like good education techniques in a co-ed class. For example, a recent meta-analysis of studies based on more than 7 million children in kindergarten through 11th grade, a University of Wisconsin-Madison researcher found there were small average gender differences in areas like activity level and ability to focus, but there weren't any significant differences in math or reading comprehension, and no solid evidence that boys and girls actually learned differently.
Well, the ACLU is now involved here, Sarah, talking about this issue as a civil rights case. What is their concern, and have they filed suit?
They have, and you can be sure that that's probably coming into why the guidance was issued right now. The ACLU has sent cease and desist letters or filed suit against school districts offering classes in Alabama, Florida, Idaho, Texas, Wisconsin, Maine, Mississippi, and West Virginia. I might be leaving some out because they're filing new ones every day. For example, in West Virginia, the suit alleges boys are allowed to move around their class more because presumably they need to exert more energy and their rooms are kept more brightly lit, while the girls are encouraged to sit quietly and share their feelings in dimly lit rooms. One of the plaintiffs, who's a girl with attention deficit disorder, is allegedly punished by being sent to the boys' class. So in general, ACLU is saying that they end up having classes that focus on gender stereotypes and use outdated research.
Hmm. Well, Sarah Sparks, assistant editor at Education Week, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Joining me now from Dallas, Texas, is Nakia Douglas, principal at the Barack Obama Male Leadership Academy, a single-sex magnet school in Dallas that teaches 400 boys from grades 6 to 12. Nice to have you, Mr. Douglas.
Hello, how are you all doing?
Well, we're okay. Tell us about your school, sir. You have 400 children in grades 6 through 12, as I said. What are your admissions criteria?
We are a magnet school, so therefore the young men at least have to have an 80 GPA and 40 percentile on norm reference exams. So we're basically talking about average young men from our local schools.
Average young men. What's the socioeconomic makeup, the racial makeup of the school?
Socioeconomic makeup, we're actually about 55% Hispanic, about 42% African-American. We have a growing Caucasian, Asian, and students of Middle Eastern descent that are now at our campus.
And how are your students performing, Mr. Douglas? Do you have data to show that your model's working there in Dallas?
Yes, ma'am. We are a part of Dallas ISD, and so therefore we take the STAR exams, which are part of Texas's state exams. And our young men are averaging 98% passing rate in all of their exams, and we average about 30% advance rate on their performance also.
Mm. So what is it? Why do you think the all-boys school works in this environment? Why is all-boys school better than a co-ed environment for your kids?
Well, for us, and the true reality for us, is that it's a choice. Here in Dallas, our Young Women's Leadership Academy has actually been around for the last 11 years, and they've had great success. And understanding and looking at the data, not only at a local level, but also at a national level, our district made the decision to move forward with an effort that also makes this option and choice to educate our young men in a single-gendered campus setting available 5 years ago. And upon receiving my appointment, I actually had a year to study best practices, so I went everywhere from public, private, and charter, from the St. Mark's Jesuits, Cistercians, Bishop Dunn, Episcopal School of Dallas, St. Phillips. I visited Urban Prep in Chicago, Bluford Drew Jemison STEM Academy in Baltimore, and then also traveled to Beijing and Chongqing, China.
Oh, my goodness.
During that year, spoke with principals, headmasters, teachers, students, alumni, board members, community members, what's worked, what hadn't worked, and if you were starting a new school, what would you put in place? And took all those best practices and those words of wisdom from those persons to create a program that would be conducive for the young men we were serving in our community.
Mm. So your school has uniforms, as I understand, a longer school day, Saturday commitments, club commitments, volunteer requirements, a lot of parental participation. I just want to get to the nugget of this. What is the anecdotal evidence? What are you seeing that makes you think that your model is working, that you're on the right path?
It's holistic in our approach. To understand the core of everything we do, you need to understand our mission statement, which is to develop young men into the impactful leaders through the development of their intellectual, moral, physical, social, and emotional skills for the global society tomorrow. And beyond that, building better husbands and fathers for our families and community.
So what happens in your school that couldn't happen there if there were girls there?
There's nothing that happens in our school that didn't happen at a co-ed school. Actually, prior to this, I was at a comprehensive school, and much like the young lady was speaking about in regards to the new requirements that are coming down from the education department, we had single-gendered courses that were available to our young men and young women with a dual-gendered course available also. And so the parents had the opportunity to opt in. The program went so well after the first year, the parents and the students asked that we loop that opportunity to the young men from ninth grade and young women from ninth grade to also when they went to 10th grade. grade, and we showed great success there too. And so now I have the opportunity to actually create that same type of environment for an all-male school here in Dallas ISD.
Mm. So families are looking for a single-sex education there where you are?
Yes, ma'am, because now it's an option. Again, our Young Women's Leadership Academy has been around for 11 years, and we're just entering our fourth year. And so we knew we had to, and we were going to be defined by our data and our students' performance, and more importantly, how they carry themselves beyond not only their academic performance, but also how they're performing socially and emotionally. There's an old quote that Frederick Douglass has. It says it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And so in this instance, we are holistically preparing our young men to be emotionally strong, to be mentally strong, to also be academically and physically strong as they prepare and embrace for the world of tomorrow.
And so do you feel your model is replicable to Middle America, to East West Coast America, generally speaking?
Yes, ma'am. It just has to be a full commitment. So not only do we look for a commitment from our students, we look for it from our parents, our faculty and staff. And so after each young man is selected for our campus, the final component, which doesn't determine whether or not they enter or not, is the interview. And when they're interviewed, we actually record it. And so they sign an oath of agreement, committing to the extended school day, committing to the uniforms, committing to the Saturdays, committing to the summer programs and opportunities. Because when you are truly vested as a family, it takes on a whole new paradigm. And we recognize that our parents come from a lot of working class settings. And so we are very creative in how we offer opportunities to keep the parents engaged. We're very creative with opportunities of how we keep the community engaged. And in doing so, they all understand that everything starts and stops with our mission statement. And if it's not aligned with that and what we're doing for our students, it doesn't happen here at our campus.
Well, good for you, Nakia Douglas. Thank you so much for your time, sir, and good luck to you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Nakia Douglas is principal of the Barack Obama Male Leadership Academy, a single-sex magnet school in Dallas. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the research on single-sex education this hour, and you can join the conversation. Parents, do you think your child learns better in a co-ed school or not? Would separating the sexes give girls more confidence to go into STEM fields and boys more confidence to go into the humanities? Joining me now from Chicago is Lise Elliott, Associate Professor of Neuroscience at the Chicago Medical School of Rosalind Franklin University. She's a founding board member of the American Council on Co-Educational Schooling, which promotes learning in a co-educational environment. She's author of Pink Brain, Blue Brain, How Small Differences Grow into Troublesome Gaps, and What We Can Do About It. Hello, Lise. Nice to have you.
Good to be here.
And with me from Chicago is Kathy Petura-Couture, professor of education at Stetson University, where she is on the research faculty of the Nina A. Hollis Institute of Education Reform. She helped implement and monitor single-sex programs in schools in Volusia and Broward counties in Florida. So nice to have you, Kathy.
Hi, thanks for having me, Jane.
So, Lise, I'll start with you. You've pored over the data. Do you see advantages to single-sex education?
Well, no. You know, I really came to this as an agnostic. I wrote this book on sex differences and similarities in children's development and realized that much of the differences we believe in are more in the eye of the beholder, that sex differences in behavior and abilities are particularly small in young children and grow larger. But anytime you start talking about gender differences, this issue of single-sex schooling always comes up. So I really did pour into the data, and I just came away really underwhelmed that they aren't the magic bullet that many people perceive. I think it's a very strong myth that single-sex education is superior, and the data just do not support it. Especially,
well, we just heard from Nakia Douglas, who said, boy, it's sure working for us here in Dallas. 400 kids, test scores are way up. They're seeing all sorts of anecdotal evidence that it's working. I mean, as you see the data, then what are the downsides?
Well, the school that Mr. Douglas described sounds absolutely wonderful. And I think, as he himself admitted, he came from a co-ed school previously, and all of the enrichments that they have implemented, the longer school days, Saturday enrichment, the very pro-academic culture that they make students sign on to before they walk in the door, all of those attributes will promote education in boys and girls together. So there's really no reason to segregate to get those same academic advantages.
All right, so what are the quantifiable problems with single-sex schools, single-sex classrooms?
So there's a real danger of stereotyping. Anytime you segregate people, you open sort of a can of worms for, you know, we're going to treat them differently, we're going to teach them differently, we're going to raise young men, we're going to raise young women. That has a very different connotation to it that research finds teachers tend to fall into. And classrooms where boys and girls are segregated do have a different tone to them. So it's probably not the best preparation for a mixed-gender workplace, for family shared leadership. It just doesn't seem the way forward in 2014.
Kathy Pechura-Couture, you've been working with schools to implement single-sex programs. What have been your results?
I can say I came into it very much the same way, agnostically. It was not an idea that was ours. It came to us from a teacher who didn't feel like the boys were boy-friendly. She was actually working with special ed kids. She was a regular ed teacher, and she had some special ed kids in her classroom, and she felt, and they were, happened to be all boys. And when she worked with them and really worked strongly with just the boys, she found that she was able to bring up their test scores and couldn't even understand why they were placed in special ed. And so she asked to do an all-boys classroom. And we went back, and it would be going back to the new laws that are being implemented, looked, disaggregated our data and at that school. It's one of our professional development schools where we do research projects that the schools want to implement. And we looked, and the girls were raising the boys' scores in reading. The school's data in reading looked, you know, pretty good. It was like at a 76% that the kids were at or above grade level in reading. And it's a Title I school, so it's a low socioeconomic school, highly diverse population. But the girls were really high, and the boys were more at like 52%. And then we looked at the girls' data in math, and the girls were really low in math, and the boys were bringing up their test scores in math. So we tried it on a real small scale. We did a pilot test in kindergarten, second, and fourth grade, because it was all volunteer. Teachers volunteered, parents volunteered, everything was a volunteer basis. And this was like 12 years ago. And we had really strong results. The boys did much better in reading. They went from like a 53% passing rate to an 89% passing rate in the single-sex classes, and it stayed the same in the mixed-gender classes. So we were like, what's going on here? And I just got done disaggregating data for the last 5 years of data, and we found statistical significance in math for both all of the single, for kids, if they were in a single-sex gender classroom, they did better mathematically than the kids that were in mixed gender classes.
So what about the
and it was at the 0.01 level, which is highly statistically significant. And we also found it in reading as well.
So what about the key argument to this, which seems to be the stereotyping piece, the gender stereotyping, teaching, treating kids differently?
We worried about that, to be honest with you, and we looked at it really carefully. But what we really found was that there are stereotypes. I'm not going to argue that there's not, but I think they're prevalent in society. And they became more prevalent in the single-sex classes. I'll give an example, of girls, that mean girl kind of thing, where it's girl bullying, where girls tend to bully by exclusion. Well, in the mixed-gender classes, the teachers didn't talk about it at all. They were like, you know, yeah, that's not really happening. But it was so evident in the mix, in the single-sex classroom, that we could actually go in there and address it. And you talk about STEM classes. We did a study, one of our students did a study last year, of just draw a scientist test. All the girls in the single-gender class drew girl scientists. Only a third of the girls in the mixed-gender classes drew girl scientists. So we really found that it was an avenue to really hit those stereotypes head-on and educate instead of, you know, it kind of just going along with the status quo.
Lise Elliott, wouldn't that be a healthy thing to do, to address some of these things head-on?
It sounds like it, but the reality is it just hasn't worked out that way. In most of the fact-finding that's gone on in these schools, you're seeing different treatment of boys and girls. You know, there's classrooms where, as Sarah was saying at the opening piece, based on alleged brain differences between boys and girls, they're dimming the lights and they're having a more gentle tone to the girls, encouraging them to be multitaskers and be more organized, whereas the boys are giving it a much more physical approach, lots of opportunity for exercise, which we now know is good for everybody's brain. But it's really being offered to boys in a way that's not being offered to girls. The reading material is different. So we're enculturing boys and girls for different roles. Boys are given more nonfiction and gross-out kind of books. Girls are given more interpersonal, you know, stories that are all about relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we're fueling the stereotypes that are already present in society. And so what school hopes to do is break down the barriers between people. We are all about diversity in this country, and we would just never dream of segregating students on the basis of religion or race in public schools, and yet we allow it in for gender, even though these are individuals who need to understand each other, who need to be friends with each other, who need to work together in a non-sexual way.
So, let me get some calls in here. I take both points here. Let's get some listeners in on this. In Detroit, Michigan, Tom is with us. Tom, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Jane. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead.
A great subject, by the way. I'm a graduate, 1966, in Detroit Cathedral here in Detroit, Michigan, of an all-boys school. There was no the girls' class. But it was 500 boys in that school. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they took us from boys and they made us men in the terms of the guys who were the Brothers of Christian Instruction that taught us. And
but what about this argument, Tom? Let me ask you, because you've been through it. What about the stereotyping piece about this masculine environment and secondarily, you know, boys having a harder time interacting with women later on in life? Did that happen to you?
No. I mean, I'm very well adjusted. I've been married to the same woman for 45 years. We've got two children, adult children, and I got three grandsons, Larry, Moore, and Curly. But, you know, there was no problem there because, you know, it's only, I mean, I look at it this way. We were there to be educated, not to, you know, get into the whole thing with the male and female thing. And somebody says, well, didn't you miss girls? I says, you don't miss what's not there. And besides, I mean, after school, we get out at 2:30, then you could go and you could, you know, interact with the females. And then after graduation from high school, mm-hmm. I went to the local university, Wayne State University. So, you know, I go from an all-boy environment, you know, after high school, down to the local, you know, city university. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's a mixed bag down there, quite naturally.
And you had no problem interacting or integrating. I hear it, Tom. I'm so glad you called. Thank you very much. Here's Lily in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Lily. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, of course.
This is such an interesting topic, and I'm confused because I feel like gender inequality is such a complicated and broad systemic problem. And I'm glad that one of your guests mentioned religion, class, race. I think we have to look at this with a very delicate intersectional lens here and see that this may be something that is taking a huge, giant step back for gender equality. The problem is how we socialize children. And when you're talking about being in single-sex schools, I think that you are at very great potential risk of perpetuating some of these issues. And like the caller just said, you can't, you know, see what's not there. I think that goes the same way on the other side of the coin, like mm-hmm. with male privilege, for example.
Got it.
But, you know, okay. And
Lily, I'm really glad you called because it's a good point. And I want to put it to Kathy Petura Couture. How could this possibly promote gender equality? Lily wants to know. Kathy?
Well, one of the things that you have to think about is that this has been an option for children, but only you talk about wealth equality. Wealthy people have been able to send their children to single-gender programs or institutes or academies for forever. But we've never been able to do this, like even a parochial school, too, because of cost. So we really think, we like that it's an option. I'm not saying that it's for every single person, but I think it's something that you should afford parents the option to do. We're not saying that every single kid should be put in a single gender classroom, but if parents want it, and we have data that shows that parents overwhelmingly support it, like 89% of our parents think that their children do better in their single gender programs, and I want to offer that to the kids in every school at every level.
So, Lisa,
and that's what I really think.
Yeah, so Lisa Elliott, let me talk about that with you. I've read that the differences between boys and girls diminish as you go up the socioeconomic ladder. So are most of these single sex schools that are trying this type of education in poorer districts?
that certainly is the movement these days. In fact, the higher socioeconomic schools, the awesome prep schools that were around, you know, since the dawn of the country, the vast majority of those actually have gone coeducational. And because the gender gaps are smaller in higher socioeconomic groups, and people are desperate to help, inner city poor kids do better in school. I should say, there's actually good news here. If you look at 40 years of NAEP testing, the National Assessment of Educational Progress by the Department of Education, the great news is that the racial gaps are closing. It's slow, but we are making progress. And, of course, that's largely in a coeducational school system. But I really see it as sort of a fad right now that there's this illusion that single sex is better because of this old history of these expensive prep schools, most of which don't even exist anymore. And people think that, what could be easier? Just separate the boys and girls and you claim all these advantages. And of course, parents are going to go for it. They don't have time to review all the studies and read all the literature. And also, parents aren't especially comfortable with boys and girls interacting, especially once they hit puberty. We're all scared of our children's sexuality, and so it sounds like a perfect solution to everything.
Let's go back to the phones. Jan is in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Jan. Glad you waited. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Fantastic topic.
Thank you.
I just want to put up, I have a daughter that graduated from Immaculate Heart High School in Los Angeles. The school has been there for 100 years, all girls, and is now a freshman at Loyola Marymount University, and I've worked in education for 22 years, once in South Central Los Angeles in an LAUSD contract, Santa Monica Malibu High School for 10 years as a sub. It's the data isn't really fairly assessed, as the last comment made was. You have to look at this socioeconomically, and we have to also look at it at a standpoint of what was mentioned, hitting puberty. It's a no-brainer that kids are going to do and excel much, much more once you get to a level of puberty. Mm.
Any downsides, Jan, for your girls? Were there any downsides for your girls?
No, my daughter, this is a renowned school, and again, for her to go to a $50,000 private school on scholarship was much to do with being in a single sex gender situation. But to suggest it's about gender equality is just ridiculous, number one. And it's about parents and students agreeing that this is a good fit for them. I don't think it's a good fit for everybody. This is not a fad. And we need to look at we need to really look at our lower advantage socioeconomic groups and look at teenage pregnancy. Really assess where we can go once these children hit puberty. But
Jan, thank you. I've got to run because of the clock, but I appreciate your call. Let's wrap this up here. Liz, should we look at these, prestigious, as the caller mentioned, $50,000 a year private schools differently than the public single set schools that we're talking about mainly here?
Well, the data just do not support the academic advantages that are claimed for single gender. I know Kathy has some nice results for a few years in their Florida schools, but that's just one small school. There's a very strong, what we call Hawthorne effect. You tell parents we're going to create this new and improved system. You invite them to sign up, and no matter what the intervention is, students do better in that kind of a situation. So, in fact, it looks from the data I've seen in Florida that the results are fading out and the differences are not as pronounced or even going in the favor of coeducational kids these days. So, I just think we know what's good for kids. There's a coalition for boys of color, and they have given awards to 5 schools who've done a great job with boys, and every one of those is a coeducational school. So schools are out there doing great things. The Thurgood Marshall Academy in D.C., the Rufus King School in Wisconsin, with boys of color, with lower socioeconomic groups, in a coeducational setting. Let's raise children for the environment, the world that they're going to live in as adults.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the debate over single-sex education in public schools this hour, and you can join the conversation. Should children have the choice to opt into a single-sex education for their child? Are there reasons beyond test scores to separate boys and girls? We're speaking with Lise Elliott, Associate Professor of Neuroscience at the Chicago Medical School of Rosalind Franklin University, and with Kathy Pachura Couture, Professor of Education at Stetson University, where she's on the research faculty of the Nina A. Hollis Institute of Education Reform. I've got calls lined up around the block here. Let's get a few in. Christina from Concord, Massachusetts. Hi, Christina. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I have a unique perspective as a mother of four boys, someone who's also gone to a single-sex girls' school. I've sent two of my boys to a single-sex boys' school, and I have two dyslexic kids who go to a school which really educates the brain. And I think, from my perspective, what we're doing wrong in education is separating kids on the basis of something like gender, which, although there are one can argue that there are some, there's a significant amount of boys whose brains may be similar and a significant amount of girls whose brains may be similar. If you have two girls named Julie and John who are dyslexic and two other kids, or two kids named Julie and John who are dyslexic and two kids named Sarah and Steve who aren't, very clearly, if you educate them according to single-sex education, they won't get the right information into their brain. And I think one of the problems that we as teachers, and I can speak for myself because I was educated as one, is that we're never taught how to study the brain and how to study what we actually teach the children, what its effect is on the actual brain. And there are studies being done at the Carroll School in Lincoln now that are doing just that. And it's amazing to see how, say, a cognitive approach to education versus a different style of education.
Mm-hmm. So it should be learning style, not co-educational or single-sex style. Got it. Christina, thank you so much for calling. Let me bring in now from Janesville, Wisconsin, Cynthia Taylor, principal of Marshall Middle School, which created a single-sex school within the larger middle school in 2008. After 5 years, the school decided to discontinue offering single-sex classes. Cynthia, welcome to you. Nice to have you.
Hello, happy to be with you.
So who advocated for the change? Why initially did you have the push to try single-sex education?
Well, it should be noted that I adopted the single-gender program, it was adopted when I first became principal here. It was in motion 1 year prior to my attending. It was a grassroots effort by the previous administration as well as teachers that are still with me today.
And so what was the effect? What were the results of your experiment?
What they were really hoping to do was just, this was all about student achievement and this was all about academic results. And what they were hoping to accomplish was to implement a program that they had really grassroots research on to see if it would make a difference and make an impact with our student population. And what we learned after 5 years is that single gender was not outperforming our regular population in either our growth or raw scores. And in some cases, our non-single gender teams, our regular education teams, regular population teams, were outperforming single gender. So it really, for us, became about the strength of the classroom teacher and what kind of journey they needed to go on to really get their academic results that we were looking for.
So why do you think it works in some places? At the top of the broadcast, we had Nakia Douglas in Dallas who says it's working great. Here you are saying, not so much there in Janesville, Wisconsin. Why do you think it works in some places and not others? Is it, as you say, it comes down to the teacher and kind of how they feel about it?
No, I think your program has hit on a number of different components that make single gender education successful or in some cases not. One is obviously having the opportunity to opt in or opt out. I believe that the culture of my school even believes to this day that it is a useful intervention. In some cases at Marshall, we have not abandoned it completely. We still maintain single gender as an opportunity in isolation as a strategy because it can be very effective. Let me give you some examples. We have options for kids. We have girl groups. We isolate our adolescents in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade for swim class based on comfort level, et cetera. I mean, it's just, we still use it. We still implement it. Mm-hmm. We use it as a strategy. But at the end of the day, it was about moving forward the achievement needle for all of our students, and we just weren't hitting the mark with the way we were implementing the program.
What were the financials of it, Cynthia? Was running a school within a school expensive?
It was cost neutral. Uh-huh. We are a traditional middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. We have 938 students, 42% free and reduced lunch. We represent one of the top 10 largest school districts in the state of Wisconsin, and we were literally offering a pilot experience mm-hmm. for our students and to see if we could move that achievement needle. And after a 5-year review, it just didn't give us the results that we were looking for.
What was the response from students and parents and teachers when you discontinued single-sex education?
You know, with any discontinuation with any program, you know, there was some significant sadness and sorrow. I still have students today, as well as teachers, that will tell me it was the greatest experience of their life, that they by far would never have, you know, opted into a different program. It came at the right time for their child in that moment, and we were able to meet their needs. And anecdotally, there's tons of really emotional anecdotal data that would suggest that, yes, this is a feel-good, effective intervention mm-hmm. or program to use. But when you look at, when we looked at in the school district of Janesville, just the bigger picture, it was not giving us the academic results we were looking for. And so our school board had to make a really tough decision, and it was hard. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Kathy Petura Couture, you support single-sex education. What do you hear in this story from Janesville, Wisconsin? I mean, does it come down to the kind of kid you've got, the different learning styles? It doesn't work for everyone?
I think part of the thing that you have to look at, too, is it's not a magic bullet. There's no educational program that's a magic bullet. People talk about, one of your guests talked about, you know, well, it's being done differently everywhere, and so we should just throw out the baby with the bath because it's not working, you know, across the board. Well, you can pick up almost any reading program, and it's not going to work everywhere for every single student, and some districts are doing it wrong or are not implementing it correctly. I'm not really sure why their data didn't support it, and I can't tell you even why our data does support it. All I know is that it works in the schools that we've tried, and I do think you have to be on guard. Am I upset about the ACLU looking into this? I'm upset that they do it on this broad scale, but I think everything has to be policed and everything has to be looked at and everything should be checked, as the new guidelines say, on a regular basis. I can say that with the schools that we're working with and the guidelines that we've looked at, I would say it's a program that should continue and should keep going on. And we have the data to prove that.
Lise Elliott, do you agree with the ACLU that separating sexes is comparable to separating people of different races in different classrooms?
Yeah, Cynthia Taylor at Janesville made an interesting comment that, you know, of the students who loved their single-sex experience, it's because they loved being with their clique, their group of, we all like to be around people who are like us, you know. I mean, if you go to a cocktail party, the men and the women separate themselves. I'm sure if we offered all Muslim schools in the public sector, Muslim families would sign up, and they would love those schools. They would feel very safe and protected in a haven of common values. So it's not hard to find anecdotal evidence that people like these organizations. But when, you know, I do support what the ACLU is doing, because they've been able to, you know, look behind the curtain and see what's truly going on in some very gender unequal mm-hmm. practices, mm-hmm. and especially the reason I got into this. I am a neuroscientist, and I was pretty shocked the way that hundreds of school districts are using, you know, fake claims about brain sex differences to really restructure classrooms. Mm-hmm. And the ACLU has collected really a lot of evidence from all around the country, Florida, Texas, Idaho, West Virginia, where this is going on, and the teachers are talking differently and teaching different things, and really feminizing the girls' classroom, masculinizing the boys' classroom in ways that just aren't going to help us going forward. And
Lise Elliott, I'm going to jump in here and say thank you to Cynthia Taylor. She's principal at Marshall Middle School. She spoke with me from Janesville, Wisconsin. Cynthia, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for telling us about your experiment up there, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Let's go back to the phones. Laura is in Tennessee, Murfreesboro. Is that right, Laura? Welcome.
In Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Murfreesboro, thank you. Jane. Glad you called.
Thank you, Jane. I feel like Cynthia was reading my mind as I listened to her. I am an educator of 35 years, a teacher, a former school principal, and currently in teacher education at the university level. And so I train teachers. I support the option of single gender education, and the important thing there is that the option is given to parents. I believe that it should not start until middle school.
Why is that, Laura?
Because issues that arise in puberty that affect learning, that affect social climate in the classroom, are usually more easily dealt with in single gender groups. But to have single gender education does not mean, first of all, that they never interact with boys. And secondly, on the question of diversity, we can have diversity within single gender groups. Because gender's only one kind of diversity.
That's for sure. So, Laura, thank you. Thank you very much for calling. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Let's go back to the phones. Corgi is calling from Springfield, Ohio. Hi, Corgi. Thanks for waiting. Glad you're
on.
Hi, Jane.
I missed the first 10 minutes of the conversation, so I'm coming in late. I don't know if you covered this, but I'm really surprised in this discussion. Nobody has mentioned by name the landmark United States Supreme Court decision in 1954, which established the principle that separation is inherently unequal. And we're not, this Supreme Court decision was not based on, you know, blacks that were separated from whites at a food counter or from water fountains.
Oh, I think we lost Corgi. Kathy, would you respond to that in the context of the Supreme Court decision that he referred to there and the comparison of it?
Well, I would say that when we talk about segregating, the people keep using the word segregation. Segregation is something that is forced. None of these programs have been forced. They're all choice. So you're talking about a choice. You have a choice to go to an African-American church. You have a choice to go to a Jewish synagogue. You have a choice to do that. And what we're really talking about here, and I think that's one of the reasons why the Supreme Court upheld the idea that you could offer single-sex classrooms, is because this is a choice option. It's not a forced option. And segregation was a forced option.
Kathy.
If I may.
Yes, go ahead, Lise.
It's Lise. You know, we don't offer the choice of single-race schools in the public sector. We don't offer the choice of single religion schools. So it's a segregation. It's just a voluntary segregation. If you look at the word up in the dictionary, it's the same meaning. And I just wanted to touch for a moment on what children are losing by only being with one gender. And that is, I study boy-girl development and the impact of siblings, that brothers bring out a more physicality and athleticism and spatial skills in girls in their sisters, and girls bring out more verbal skills and more relational skills in boys. And these are where our biggest gaps are. Boys and girls have so much to learn from each other, and in a classroom which is supervised, you take away the sexuality. You know, the problem with the single gender idea that, oh, well, they can interact outside the classroom. Well, outside the classroom is where all the shenanigans go on. If they're actually in a classroom, it's a supervised, structured environment where boys and girls have the opportunity to actually learn to work together in a non-sexual way.
Let's get Kathy in here from Norwood, Massachusetts. Yeah. Kathy, hi. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much.
Sure.
My comment relates a little bit more to the parent. I think as a parent, it is one of your major goals and responsibilities is to get a sense of your child and what environment would be best for them, both psychologically, academically, socially, and in terms of personal development. And the children don't all fit one mold. That it is, I think, a good idea to have an option for the child and for the parents to choose single-sex high schools or middle schools or grammar schools. Mm. I have three sons, and they're all different, and we sat down and kind of assessed what kind of environment would be best for them, the size of the school, the mission of the school, the structure of the community, and all of that. We did send our boys to single-sex schools for middle school and for high school, and they were all able to thrive because it was something that we very carefully thought about, researched. It is, unfortunately, an option, not an option in many of the public schools, but I really think that it should be.
Laura, Kathy, thank you so much. I'm just going to jump in for time's sake. Lise Elliott and Kathy Petrua-Couture, is this, if single-sex is not the answer in education, what do you think is? Kathy, you first.
You mean, that's a pretty big question. What do I think is the answer? Probably differentiation, if I was going to choose one thing.
Okay.
It would be to differentiate. And I think there's actually something with these single-sex classes. One of the things the teachers seem to really like it. When we surveyed the teachers and we've looked at teachers in multiple school settings, they like teaching in single-sex classrooms. And I think one of the reasons is it's easier to differentiate when you're dealing with one group of students. And I'm not saying they're all alike, but they tend to have more things in common. And that may be a stereotype or something like that, but it's easier to address, as I said before, like girl bullying and hitting something head on than it is having to put out like 15 fires at one time.
So Lise Elliott, last word with you, 10 seconds here. What do you say?
Well, I think that Mr. Douglas's school in Dallas is got all the elements. You just add boys and girls together and call it the Young Leaders Academy with long school days and high academic expectations and lots of nurturing and support for the whole child. That sounds perfect.
Excellent conversation. Thank you for your perspectives on both sides. Lise Elliott, Associate Professor of Neuroscience at the Chicago Medical School of Rosalind Franklin University. Really appreciate it, Lise. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kathy Petrua-Couture, Professor of Education at Stetson University. Really appreciate your perspective, Kathy. Thanks.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Listeners, thanks to you as well. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.